Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th of February, Anno Domini 2012, and you epitome of nerddom. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Read Dr. Seuss. Here we go. I could have gone on and on.
You were on a roll.
Dr. Who?
Oh? No, the other one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Google has unified 60, that's 60, of its privacy policies. The plan changes have caught the attention of U.S. lawmakers. Google says these changes would not take away the control of its customers, the control that they have over how data are collected and used. The new policy, which went into effect on Wednesday, treats information from most Google products as a single trove of data which the company could use for targeting advertising. By consolidating numerous product-specific privacy policies into one comprehensive policy, we're explaining our privacy commitments to users of those products in 85% fewer words, said Pablo Chavez, Google's director of public policy. A lot of P's in that sentence. A bipartisan group of 8 U.S. lawmakers questioned whether the new policy would allow Internet users to opt out of data sharing systems and express concern about the safety of customer data in a letter sent to Google last Thursday. In a letter dated the previous Monday, Monday, Chavez responded directly to the lawmakers' concerns, stressing that the updated privacy policy does not allow us to collect any new or additional types of information about users. The company defended its decision to consolidate the policy, saying it would create a better experience for users, and added that most of its product-specific policies have already allow information to be shared across product lines when their users are signed into their Google accounts. But the previous varied policies did not allow Google to, for example, recommend cooking videos when a user signed on went to YouTube after searching for recipes on the search engine. We want to change that so we can create a simpler, more intuitive Google experience to share more of each user's information with that user as they use various Google services, Chavez said in the letter. The letter also said that the company's products can still be used without signing into a Google account. Google's privacy tools remain in place under the consolidated policy, allowing users to edit information stored in their account, change personalized ad preferences, and control how their data are collected and used. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google's new consolidated privacy policy. And the choices are, I love it, doesn't bother me, kind of bothers me, I hate it, and I never pay attention to that cruft. And so far, we've got 37 votes. I never pay attention to that cruft is number one, followed by don't bother me. Followed by I hate it. Only 3 of you love it. But when you're done with that, I know you, and I know you will have more to say. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to a truly great website where you can enter said opinion to the question, Google's new consolidated privacy policy, who do you trust? So far, we've got, 7 people who have said something there. So, and when you're done with that, come on back and join us. You don't even have to leave because you can do that with your hands and your eyes while your ears are busy listening to us.
Yeah, it's nice that they're consolidating, but I don't know.
Well, yes, and I have to say that I've actually read the privacy policy, which so many people have been coming and they have not. And it really doesn't say anything different. The big difference is they're now saying, if you're signed into Google Plus, we're going to consolidate all the data we're already gathering on you. I mean, it's not that they're gathering anything new or different. They're just now going to share it across products. And really, what some people are saying is that Google's over overarching plan is that everything will feed into and out of Google Plus. So, you know, now when you sign up for Google Docs, you actually get a Google Plus account. And when you sign up for YouTube, you get a Google Plus account, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you should be able to use those all those programs exactly like you've been using them, with the understanding that they're more able, if you're logged into the Google your Google account, they're more able to share data across platforms. But you can opt out of a lot of that stuff. There's a whole lot of stuff in the settings that you can opt out of, and they're really not collecting anything new. It's not anything new or different. It's the same stuff they've always been getting. So,
in fact, I would have assumed that they already were sharing information across their products.
Yeah, well, they kind of were, but now they kind of were and they kind of weren't, because they hadn't come out and said they would.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're stating it more plainly. Again, the difference is not in what they're collecting, just in the fact that they're now plainly saying they're going to share it across platforms. So there's really no difference if you've been a fan.
Nothing surprising is they've had 60 different privacy policies. They had that many products?
Yes.
Let's see, mail. Mail.
Mail, Docs,
yep.
YouTube, Picasa, and others.
Yeah. It's that more button no one ever goes to.
Yeah, you can list them all. No, not on that one.
60 different policies. We're consolidating them, yeah.
Yeah, and that's all they're really doing is they were essentially all the same, which is why they say they're doing it now in 85% fewer words, you know, rather than repeat all the same stuff on each one. So if you use a Google button, it's really no different from, you know, how you can now go to many websites and where you would normally put in a comment, it already knows who you are on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's the same idea, only Google is upfront in telling you they're doing that and sharing the data among their products. Whereas Facebook has been
kind of secretively keeping it. Yeah.
About it. Yeah. Yeah. But it's actually pretty easy to do if you're using a WordPress thing. There's a plugin. I mean, it's not difficult on Facebook, so that you can, you know, do your Facebook stuff. It's kind of interesting, actually. Kind of interesting. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of people who are up in arms about this. I guess they just don't realize there's actually no difference, except for the fact that there's a little more sharing now than there used to be.
Yeah.
But they're not gathering more information or different information. Like, they're not sharing it with anybody else. They're sharing it with themselves.
Mm-hmm. What did Eric Schmidt say years ago? If you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't care.
Oh, well, I think that was Mark Zuckerberg, actually. But we've got a thing on that too. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But this is this struck me as the thing that everybody was really talking about. There's a whole lot of that going on. And apparently there's some sort of sporting event tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess.
We are legally obligated to not say the name, though.
Yes. I think you can.
No, I've read about that in advertising. If you're not advertising on the network that's actually showing the game's name is a trademark, and you can only say the game.
Oh, really?
Without violating their trademark.
What?
Everybody does.
I used to work with a lot of advertising agencies, and they had to be very careful about that.
You're telling me I can't say the name of the
event?
Because it's a trademark, unless you give trademark notice.
But they do it on the news and all that all the time.
No, but watch what channel you're on. If you're on the channel that's showing the game, they'll say the name of the game. If you're not, they'll often say
the
game.
What about all the
game.
100,000 sports channels across the country on radio
and talking about it? The big
are
game.
You
the big game, yeah.
Well, no, they even... No, all the channels are
so
talking...
So I can name it if I say blah, blah, blah is a
registered trademark,
of the National Football League.
Yeah, but no, wait a minute. Going back... I wonder about
that. It's only been in the last couple of years I've been hearing this.
No, because if you go to any of the local channels, say 8, 10, or 13, and you go to their sports segment, they usually always have a reporter down there, and they're talking about the event. And they mention the name there, and it's across all networks.
Yeah, how can you not?
Yeah.
I was surprised, though. I didn't know they could have that event without the Steelers, but apparently they can.
When I was a kid, it was the Cowboys and Steelers, like every year.
Every year. Actually, I'll be watching the
Miami
Bowl this year.
Miami used to.
I think of it as the Commercial Bowl because I watch it for the commercials.
Yeah.
Yep. Supposed to be some awfully good ones this year.
I used to always love the Budweiser's ones.
They're leaking out already.
You know, with the horses. And
they're all leaking out. I saw one with Seinfeld. Can I say his name?
Yeah.
Well, there's trademark issues there, too.
Oh, my heavens.
No.
Billy Seinfeld, the guy I went to high school with.
Yeah. They're commercial.
Well, did you hear about your commercial story. Then.
No, that's I saw it. It was actually very funny.
Did you see the Steve Jobs doll that some company was going to try to make?
Yes.
And it came up with all kinds of, the bloggers were talking about the legal aspects of it, and he's dead now. Does he still own the trademark of his image? And there's only a few states that do let you trademark your image after death. It's usually involving celebrities, so you can't use a celebrity's picture as an implied endorsement because their image is their tradecraft. But after they're dead, there's apparently looser rules.
Hmm.
That's why, Frank Sinatra showed up in a vacuum cleaner commercial? No, not Sinatra, the dancer.
Fred Astaire.
Yeah. Dancing with a vacuum cleaner because he's dead now. So his estate probably got involved with that. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a bunch of estates are doing that. The estate of Edgar Rice Burroughs sued for a couple of things.
Have you seen the trailer? You're John Carter of Earth?
I'm
John Carter of Mars.
John Carter of Mars, exactly. Barsoom. It's not Mars. It's Barsoom.
Yeah.
They called it. I can't wait. Man, I'll tell you what. When I was a teenager, I read every one of those stories. Tars Tarkas, Barsoom, the incomparable Deja Thoris. I can't wait. I'm a John Carter geek. I can't wait. They're going to screw it up royally, but I can't wait.
Probably,
I don't care.
Yeah, but
I can't wait.
You know, going back to the commercial, so the one that still sticks in my mind, though, is recent one. Is that little kid trying to play Darth Vader?
Yes.
And he's sitting there, and then he finally goes out to his dad's car, and the dad turned it on.
That was months before it showed up on regular TV.
Yeah. Oh, that was
instead of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That one they still air that one, and it's really a cutie. Of course, E-Trade ones are always good with the little baby.
The E-Trade ones are pretty good. There's a bunch of stuff. It's $300,000 a minute. Oh, that was 10 years ago. It's got to be half a million or more.
$600,000, I think.
Yeah,
well, you wonder, though, in the economy, maybe you could get a deal. Maybe only, $400,000 a 30-second spot.
Yeah, that would be
cheap.
Really kind of wonderful.
Mm-hmm. But
and there's always, who is it, GoDaddy that says their commercials are too hot to show up and you have to go to their website to.
Yeah.
Well, right.
That's. Yeah. Oh, what a great leader that is. I mean, they, especially when Kilpatrick there was driving for NASCAR.
Yeah, right.
They'd lead it up, and then boom. I mean, on the whole NASCAR website and that, they were talking about, the folks that were driving to that page, they brought it down at one point because of all the NASCAR people trying to hit on it and see what's going on and all that. And it's like, nothing.
$3.5 million, I think.
Wow, this is true.
It went down.
Without the clear permission of the NFL, broadcasters and other media may not use the following terms or images. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or any team name or nickname.
Yep.
Mm? Uh-oh. Apparently, I wasn't supposed to say NFL either.
Without saying trademark of the National Football League.
No, it says without clear permission, broadcasters may not use that term.
Yeah.
So I apologize for him. We can say the big game, the professional football championship game. We can say the date of the game. Thank heaven they have not actually trademarked days of the year. The names of the two competing cities, as long as the team names are not mentioned. Any statement mocking the fact that the NFL doesn't allow them in. Oops.
Now, what do they do for, a lot of these places, that have displays and everything else?
They're paying a licensing fee. Yeah. You know, and like, they have permission.
You know, like, say...
Wait, the stores.
I was going to say, the stores that are advertising, get the big TV for the, you know...
For the big game.
Big game, yeah. And, you know, and then they mention... Or for the big parties, you know,
yep.
Different food companies and all that.
Ah, news programs and other media may use the trademark terms under a special condition called nominative fair use when simply reporting the facts of the game after it has occurred, for example. Reporters may say the phrase and the names of the teams involved. Still, the uses of the terms must be strictly informative and imply no association between the media and the because I can't mention that name either.
Talk about censorship.
The good news is I'll be watching the Puppy Bowl.
That, watch out. That might be trademarked.
It's trademarked by somebody, too.
Yeah, probably. Oh, yeah.
Jump down on us for saying that. You know, the ASPCA?
Apparently this started in 2004.
No one may publicly broadcast the game on a screen larger than 55 inches diagonally.
Whoa.
Seriously. We want you because to enjoy becomes, the heck out of the game, but not in any well, way that you would find
that becomes a public performance, and we're back to
so
that.
So if I've got a 60-inch TV, and if I invite you over to watch the game, we're in violation of the law of the...
Of their trademark policy.
Of their policy.
Well, for the longest time,
I don't have a 60-inch TV. All my TVs together don't make 60 inches.
For the longest time, public performance was never defined, but the FCC recently defined that as more than 10. So if you have a big family, you're in trouble.
Okay, but if I just invite you two guys over...
That might be okay.
That might be okay. Because if I had a 60-inch TV and I have fewer than 10 people, it's still a private performance? I don't know.
Everybody over to Nick's.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, only up to 9.
Well, they can watch the neighbor's big screen TV through your window.
We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Sid O'Connor. Join me Sunday mornings from 7 until noon right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And if 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I will say that the event this year averages. The average is $3.5 million.
For how long?
Per 30-second spot.
Wow.
$3.5 million. That's the average.
Imagine if we could get one of those sponsors to be an underwriter of our program.
Yeah.
We'd be set, you know, the station would be set for, a number of years.
Or, of course, there's always Facebook. In a move that has been hotly anticipated, Facebook has filed with the SEC to raise $5 billion, that's billion with a B, in an initial public offering of its stock in the United States. The company will trade with the stock symbol of FB. Morgan Stanley grabbed the lead bookrunner role, and Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Barclays Capital, and J.P. Morgan finished off the total of 6 initial bookrunners. The timeline puts Facebook's public offering on the slate for mid-May. It now has to enter a mandated quiet period. So that could mean the timeline is the last new product we see from the company until that period is up. Facebook is saying in the filing that it has 845 million active monthly users. 845 million active monthly users. The company made $3.71 billion in revenue, with a $1 billion profit in 2011, nearly doubled from 2010. At present, the company has $3.9 billion in cash on hand. But Apple better watch out.
They're only $100 billion.
Yeah, right. Well, this week. Yeah. Founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg owns 28.4% of the company, drawing a $483,000 salary, except he is now put in to get a dollar a year because he thinks he's Steve Jobs. The company even credits Zynga with providing 12% of its revenue in 2011. The company will focus on mobile in the future, and with good reason, according to the filing. We had more than 425 million MAUs, mobile access users, who used Facebook mobile products in December 2011. We anticipate that's 425 million mobile users in December of 2011. We anticipate the rate of growth in mobile users will continue to exceed the growth rate of our overall users for the foreseeable future, in part due to our focus on developing mobile products to encourage mobile use of Facebook. Because, you know, God forbid you're in the bathroom and aren't on Facebook. The filing then goes on to explain as a risk. Hey, people do it. As a risk,
TMI.
As a risk factor, Facebook relies heavily on the interoperability of mobile OSs with its application. We are dependent on the interoperability of Facebook with mobile web operating systems that we do not control, such as Android and iOS. And any changes in such systems could that degrade our product's functionality or give preferential treatment to competitive products, Google, could adversely affect Facebook usage on mobile devices. Do you think Facebook is really worth $5 billion? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And I also have the text screen up. If they want to text us, they can reach us at 585-209-9010.
We're not on Facebook.
No.
We have a Facebook site, just I'm not... I don't have time. I can't look at that.
It's called, Having a Life, maybe?
It's blocked here anyway.
Yeah, right. It's blocked here anyway.
Did you see the Joy Tech cartoon this week about Facebook? A kid going to his broker, I want to buy some Facebook stock. And the broker is saying, hey, you ought to make a quick buck with buy and flip during the IPO frenzy. And the kid goes, no. This is a long-term investment. I think Facebook's just going to keep growing. No one will ever get tired of it. And then there's a news headline, broker rushed to hospital due to laughter attack.
Yeah, right.
How many people are going to buy and flip it just to try to make a quick buck?
Oh, talking about laugh attacks, my one friend Trish there sent me this link with all these Carol Burnett segments.
Who's funnier than her?
She sent me one with Tim Conway.
I love Tim.
I love the ones where he and Harvey get laughing so much they can't continue the sketch.
They had the other woman that played Carol's like mother,
Vicky Carr.
Yes.
Lawrence.
So.
No.
Really?
Maybe. Well, they have, the four of them are there, and Tim Conway is going on and on about this elephant.
The elephant joke, yes.
Oh.
Yes. I think Dick Van Dyke was in that one, too.
Yes, he was the fourth person. I take it back. And I was just about falling out of my chair. Yeah, it's like I had to take my glasses off because the tears were...
Let me tell you a story. I met both Tim Conway and Harvey Korman.
Get out.
Once, yeah.
Where?
We were doing dinner theater in Detroit. At the Gratiot Inn.
Dude, you got around.
I got around. At the Gratiot Inn. I was part of a national tour. And we were there, and I was sitting at the bar, and I hear this voice next to me, and I know this voice, and I turn around, and it's McLean Stevenson from MASH. And he's hitting hard on this woman sitting on the other side of him. All of a sudden, her boyfriend comes out of the bathroom. He's like 11 feet tall and built like a refrigerator. So he suddenly turns around and starts talking to me. He says, and what do you do? Well, I'm at the dinner theater here. And he actually got interested. He said, holy cow. He said, we're here with a bunch of celebrities in a golf tournament. And Evel Knievel's bodyguard came here yesterday. He saw your show and loved it. He said, and this guy's got the IQ of a houseplant. But he loved this show and we all wanted to come and see it, but we couldn't. So tell me about it. So I did. So he says, guys, come on over. Harvey Korman and Tim Conway come over. I'm now sitting with these three guys.
Oh.
We sat and drank together all night long.
Dude.
The two of them, Korman and Conway, just got drunker than you could believe possible. Conway's as funny in real life as he is
on stage.
And Korman just could not stop laughing at him. I thought the man was going to die of asphyxia because he could not take a breath. And Conway was hysterical. He just was funnier and funnier and funnier as the night went on. And they put on a whole show for us, essentially, there. And it was just very, very, very cool evening. Also, they bought all the drinks. So that was pretty nice.
Oh, speaking of another one, I don't know if you're interested. Another friend of mine, she sent me this link about, the talent show and that, where the folks audition, they get it down.
American Idol?
Yes, that type of thing, and they have the judges. You know how that one British woman came out and they kind of blew people away?
Susan Boyle.
Yeah. Well, they have the one floating around of this little girl.
Yeah.
And evidently she was on there and didn't get selected. But it's like, all right, you're expecting. And you have to look again and it's like, that voice is coming out of that 12-year-old.
There's been a couple of those over the years. Yeah, like, there was a 12 or 13-year-old boy that could sing opera like he was 50, and doing it his whole life.
Well, her uncle had written this song about homeless people and that, and people who don't have everything that everybody else does.
Right.
And she wailed this tune out, and it was like, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
And she did, with her voice, though, I mean, didn't get picked. Wow. They have to be pretty brutal. I mean, because you don't expect it. You expect a little tiny voice out of this, and it's like, man, that came down from the lower stomach, and unbelievable.
Yep. The problem with most of these shows is they're really all looking for exactly the same voice.
Mm.
You know, they're not looking for a great singer. They're looking for somebody who sings just like everybody else who's famous right now anyway.
I saw the commercial promo clip for one of them, because my wife has to watch all of those.
Of course.
And whatever city they're in, Steven Tyler getting out of the limo, 10,000 people are going to show up today, and I got to listen to the same effing Adele song all effing day.
That's exactly right.
Rolling in the Deep.
Yep, that's exactly right.
That's too.
How it works.
Yep.
And we learned, well, man, I'll tell you what. A friend of mine asked me to help him run the auditions for a Broadway show, an off-Broadway show. He cast me in it, and then he said, come and help me with these auditions because I can't do this alone. We spent at the time, well, and this happens in every audition. There's some particular speech that's popular at the time. This was a speech from Shaw's St. Joan for the women.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they told me you're fools. I was not to listen to your wise words and yada, yada, yada. We must have heard that 2,000 times during the week. I mean, every single woman who came in had exactly the same speech. And really, after the first day, I no longer paid attention. It could have been an unbelievably good actress who came in, but because she picked the same speech everybody else was using, we just stopped listening.
True.
We just stopped listening. It's human nature. We just couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I teach students when I get to teach acting, well, nobody teaches auditions. Nobody teaches auditions anymore. But when I did teach auditions, one of the things we talked about was pick something nobody else is using.
Why don't they teach it?
I don't know. It's stupid. It's like teaching how to go out and interview for a job.
Yeah,
you have to do
that
it.
That is like interviewing. Hello.
That's exactly right.
And if you don't deliver it right or have it prepared correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to fail most times.
Exactly.
Have you heard the story about Indiana Jones? Harrison Ford doing the auditions for Star Wars. He was just there as somebody's buddy to read against. And that no one was considering. He didn't want an acting job. And he was just reading against people to give them something to work off of. And hey, he's pretty good.
that's like the guy in Battlestar Galactica, whatever his name is. I can see his face, can't think of his name. But he's known as a great reader, and so they always bring him in to read against people. And he read that whatever character he played for the entire series. And
Hogan, Colonel Ty?
No. One of the secondary characters, the engineer. What's his name?
Gata. Felix Gaeta? No.
Doesn't matter. I'll find it. I'll figure it out later. But, you know, after he'd read it about 200 times, they just said, well, I think it's you. It's you we want for this part.
Hmm.
So, yeah. But, yeah, they really – Aaron Douglas.
Yeah.
Aaron Douglas? Yeah.
Tyrell.
Thank you.
Tyrell. The chief engineer.
Yep. That's our Chandra in the IRC chat who did that, who caught that name. Thank you. I appreciate that. I could see his face. I just couldn't think of his name.
Yeah.
That happens to me in the mirror sometimes. That's the guy.
You get scared, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I don't know who that is, but yeah, I like him. What's he doing in my house?
Yeah. Break in.
Yeah.
Michael Hogan does a lot of voiceover work now. I guess he's in Skyrim.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
With that distinctive voice.
Yeah. Well,
sometimes it's bad to have a distinctive voice because then everyone knows it's you.
Well, the Star Wars also, I saw that they're bringing that out in the 3D.
3D, yeah. I keep wondering.
Don't make any new movies. Just keep milking the old stuff.
I keep wondering if they're going to edit down Jar Jar.
Cut him out entirely. I will go see it if they take him out of the movie.
Did you see the fan Star Wars? Lucasfilm put out a call on YouTube, and people could make 10-second clips. And they did the entire Star Wars movie with thousands of people doing each their own 10 seconds.
I would still like him to see him do, you know, 7, 8, and 9.
No, that would be new. That would be something new and different.
Star Wars Uncut, that's called.
Then they could sit there and milk all 9 of them.
Yeah, that's true.
Which a trilogy is supposed to be.
That's true. I think he's
wasn't it originally supposed to be 9?
Yes. It was a trilogy of trilogies.
Okay.
Right? Three trilogies.
You're right. Yeah,
told from the robot's point of view. People don't realize that the robots are the stars of the movie.
Yes.
Have you seen the phone commercial? The guy's trying to choose between a new phone that makes beeping noises and R2-D2 that makes beeping noises.
Well, they're both droids.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for him to show up in the commercial because they had to buy the rights from Lucasfilms anyway. Yeah. So, to use the word droid.
And the guy...
Can we say droid?
Probably not.
We're not allowed to say...
Registered trademark of Lucasfilm.
Right. But I think we're allowed to say that,
yes,
I think.
Yeah, I think that we are.
I don't know. It's a weird world out there now.
Well, that's one thing I've enjoyed on my phone, is being able to download some of the songs and then from there create ringtones.
Yep.
I just downloaded a free app and it just pulled, you know, it said, here's a song, and I can pull in other ringtones that I like, especially a couple of them that I've created off the Leonard Cohen CD.
I love Leonard Cohen.
And
listen, have I told you about AirDroid?
No.
Oh. AirDroid. It's a thing for your phone, right? And yeah, write it down. Oh, he's got the phone. It's an app, and you run the app, and it gives you you have to have your wireless on. Okay, gives you an IP address and a random password. You go to your browser and put in that address. It comes up and asks for the password, and now you can control your phone through your web browser. Including uploading and downloading music or ringtones or pictures. So you take a bunch of pictures with your phone, hook it up with AirDroid, and move them over to your hard drive.
There's one for the iOS called AirShare, but it's a different company.
It's a different company. Yeah. I don't think it does quite the same thing.
Yeah, basically,
I'll have to check that one out today.
It turns your device into a web server, and you can share your files across your network the same way.
Oh, nice. I'll have to look that one up then. Give me a sheet of paper. I'll write that one down.
I'm going to post these links.
Yeah, post the links to AirDroid and AirShare. In the meantime, do we have time? No, we don't have time. We have to take a break.
Yeah, that's what I was about to tell you, but we got...
Just a couple of seconds. So anyway, if you're an Android user, check out AirDroid. If you're an iOS user... Not the one from Cisco. Check out AirShare.
There's a thing in the Steve Jobs biography about how Jobs went to Cisco and said, "We're taking these names."
Yeah.
Yeah. iOS and iPhone were both trademarks of Cisco before Apple started using them.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Dar from the frozen north, and not so frozen these days. And you, back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Holy cow, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Linda's slipping in.
That's Linda. Linda's coming in. Hello, Linda. It is 44 minutes after the hour. On Soundbites, we have Dar on the line from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dar.
How do, gentlemen?
How are you?
Fine, yourselves?
Peachy, thanks. What's up with you this
fine
day?
Well, you were talking about Facebook.
Yes, we were.
Well, here is a taxpayer. Taxpayers should rejoice that Facebook is around.
Really?
Yes. It's on YouTube, and it's entitled Close Your Facebook Account.
Really?
Close?
Again, this is not what it seems.
Is it ever?
My subtitle of it is FBI saying to all of us, thanks for everything, Facebook suckers.
Well, the CIA is an investor in Facebook.
There you go.
That's well known. Apparently not, but...
Well, that explains this video.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, we don't have to keep secret files on people because they do it themselves.
They do it. They put everybody is putting everything online. The only reason I still use Facebook is to keep contact with my daughter, who's on Facebook all the time putting everything.
But I don't really use it for much of anything else anymore. I still have my anything I put on Twitter goes automatically to Facebook, but I rarely go and put stuff on Facebook if it's not for my daughter.
I had a customer yesterday that on his Facebook page, he sees pictures of himself that he doesn't want on the internet. And so he's asking how to delete them. And the short answer is you can't because you didn't post them. Someone right. you know had a picture and you're in it.
That's right.
You can ask them to take it down, but that's about it.
Yeah, but it could be tagged in so many other places.
Yep.
Forget it. Once it's up there, that's what folks have to use a little more discretion on the stuff, as we've been saying right along, that they post up there. Because once it's up there, just because one person has it, it can be picked up by so many thousands of other people and uncover itself, you know, months later. You think it's gone. And
years later.
Yeah, you know, pops up again.
Yeah, we teach that every recruiter, every human resources firm of any size whatsoever has somebody who digs into Facebook. And if you think they can't get at your private stuff, you're very, very naive. Facebook is a sieve. Sorry, Dar?
Sorry. Well, this brings all of you gentlemen use Wi-Fi, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But is it encrypted? Or not?
Well, and that's a question. If I'm at home, all my Wi-Fi is encrypted.
Yeah.
If I'm at work, all my Wi-Fi is encrypted. But when you're in a, coffee shop, if you don't see HTTPS at the top of the screen, you're just giving your username and password to everybody who's got a machine.
That's kind of the second tier encryption. The first tier would be the wireless encryption. And even if it is encrypted at the coffee shop, everyone else at the coffee shop is in the same encrypted network, so they can see your stuff anyway. So you want to make sure that the website you're going to is encrypted whenever you're doing anything securely.
And that's HTTPS.
That's what they say.
Yeah, absolutely true. The simple reality is that there is no privacy on the internet, and you don't have control over some of the stuff that goes up there. You know, you don't have to post pictures of you in that drunken party, but everybody's got a cell phone nowadays, and every one of those cell phones has a camera, and every one of those cameras auto-uploads stuff to Facebook. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you except that either you accept the fact that you're going to see that stuff on Facebook or you don't go to those kind of parties.
The last election we had was a lot of people were commenting. It was the first election in this, you know, Facebook era. And several officials around the country, candidates, had, you know, dirty Facebook secrets, basically. One guy was the star of one of the MTV reality shows, and he got elected anyway. So they're trying to point to that and saying, it doesn't matter what we did as a youth, because, you know, now we're grown up and adults, and we'll be responsible.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong.
Even though, you know, there's video of me from television when I was, you know, drunk in a hot tub with three girls. You know?
Right. Yeah, you're right, Dar. It's we're really at the point for the I tell my daughter this all the time, and I told my godson the same thing. I said, you know, it wasn't that I didn't do stupid things when I was your age, but nobody had a cell phone. Nobody had a camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things I did as a youth where the statute of limitations has not yet run out, and that's
ever
actually
will.
Not a joke. But the reality is nobody knows I did them because there were no proof. Nobody knows there's no proof. There's no cameras. There's none of that stuff. So
how many employment applications were we creative? Use creative writing in.
Mm-hmm.
all of them.
And now we're hearing about employment applications that are requiring you to put down your Facebook login information, not just your account name, but your login information. I don't know how legal that is.
Yeah, that's an invasion of privacy.
You want a job? You got to do it, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of crossing the line, invasion of privacy?
Yeah, it depends. What Pawn Stars last week or so, they had to hire somebody new, and they were showing some of the interviews, and the old man is asking inappropriate questions. Are you married? Do you have kids? And apparently you cannot ask that in an interview anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because you can't discriminate against people with kids.
Right.
Well, I just want to know if he's responsible. Well, you can't ask those sort of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If I volunteer that I have a child.
Yeah.
Right. That's one thing, but you can't ask it. Oh, yeah. You're right, Dar, but people don't have to ask it anymore. They just have to look you up on, of course. They just have to look you up on Facebook. They don't even need to ask you any questions anymore.
So that means if you don't have an FB account, you're SOL.
Often.
Well, what are you trying to hide?
Exactly.
Oh, brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah, it's getting to be that way, Dar.
Okie doke.
Have a good one, Dar.
Thanks.
Stay warm.
It's there's some pretty amazing stuff out there on Facebook. Yeah. Things that I don't know. I personally would not have been proud of, but I guess I'm not a college student anymore.
There's a joke website called Failbook. People that have posted stupid things and have failed on Facebook. A lot of them are going to the party, skipping school to go to the party tonight, and someone commenting, you know, your mom is one of your Facebook friends, or the teacher is one of your Facebook friends.
Right. All right, our next caller is Sam from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sam. What's your question?
How are you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. Nick, I got Windows 7. And
okay.
every time I put up or make a document, it defaults right to my documents. How do I export my documents to Google Docs?
Use Google Docs to create the document.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you want to do is actually create documents in Google Docs.
Correct.
Right. You do that through the easiest way to do that at this point is right through your web browser to actually do it in Google Docs. As opposed to using any of the Microsoft products or anything else, because the thing that people don't seem to appreciate is that you only have limited storage on Google Docs, except that any document you create in Google Docs doesn't take up any of that storage. So you can have 50,000 documents, if they're all Google Docs, created in Google Docs, they don't take up any storage. You really do it from the website itself. You log into the website to Google Docs. You click the Create button. You select Document from the drop-down, and you write your document right inside your web browser. And you don't need any of the Microsoft Office or OpenOffice or any other Office.
There are ways to take documents you've created on your local computer and upload them to Google Docs, and I've posted a link on how to do that. But you basically do that through the Google Docs website.
Okay, you've posted a link on your radio station here?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because the reason I'm asking that, I have documents already out that I've already created, and I don't want to rewrite them again. That's why I wonder how to export them.
Well, you could always open. Say
copy
you've
and
worked.
Paste, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you open, say created something in Word, you could open it up in Word, select it all, copy it, then open up a document in Google Docs and just paste it.
Oh, okay.
That'll save you from, you know, having to retype the whole thing all over again.
Right. Okay.
And then you can delete it off your machine, thus saving you space there, too.
It doesn't say what format document it accepts, though.
It accepts pretty much everything,
yeah.
Except it will save it as a
Google Doc format in the end, right?
No. RTL? I don't know that you can upload it as a Google Doc. That's an interesting question. I'll look that up during the commercial.
Yeah, I'm on Google's help page, and it doesn't say what kind of documents you can upload.
You can upload anything, but they'll
yeah.
Whether it's readable at the other end is another question.
And there lies the challenge.
Right.
I would assume Microsoft Word files and text files.
Well, one of the things that I've done is I open up Google Docs in my browser, then I open up the Word document. I select all and then paste it into the Word document.
Yeah.
That works. 99.9% of the time that works.
There it is, supported formats.
So that's the easiest way to do it, Sam.
Lots of supported format. The Microsoft Office formats, both Doc and DocX, and then Excel and XLXX.
Most of my documents are created by OpenOffice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it takes those two.
Windows Metafile. It won't, ODS. That's the open document.
The open document standard, open document sheet, and open document text, ODTs.
Okay.
It doesn't say ODT though. Interesting. But open doc will save as a Word file, and Word can upload.
Right.
Okay.
So it looks like it supports most of the popular formats.
Beautiful. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Right next to the create button is an upload button.
Okay.
In the two red buttons to the on the left side underneath Google, underneath Docs, it says create, okay. And then next to it is an upload button.
Upload button. Beautiful.
There you go.
And one megabyte is the largest single file you can upload at any given time.
Right.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well, that, a megabyte is...
That's
is,
pretty big.
A million characters.
Right, it's a million characters, and most...
No, I haven't got those. Okay, I'm thinking of something else. But okay, I haven't got that.
You might have audio that's bigger than a megabyte.
Yeah.
You might have video and pictures, but you really, if you have a document that's bigger than a megabyte, it's got to be a big document.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's quite a novel.
400,000 cells in your spreadsheet. Presentations can be 10 megabytes.
Right. So,
and all of this is in the link that I've posted on Google Docs.
Right. You shouldn't have a problem with any of that. It may be easier for you to, as I said, open up a brand new document in Google Docs and then open up your document in Microsoft Office, select all, copy, and then go over to the Google Doc and paste.
Okay.
If it's just text, that might work better.
Just text, yeah, because that's what I want, just text.
Yeah. I actually did that yesterday. Today's Saturday. I did that yesterday. We were sharing a we wanted to share a document that I had created. So I thought, well, let's just see if this works, because I'd never done it before. It worked fine. Okie doke.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, I find myself using standalone Office products less and less, and Google Docs more and more, because it's just way too convenient. I can be anywhere and on any of my systems and use it. It just is, or even my phone, although it's a little clumsy on my phone, obviously. But
yeah,
you can do it anywhere.
A tablet type of situation is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where somebody else was asking me, you know, they heard our show last week that they were talking about, you really think laptops are going to go away? I go, yeah, because with more and more cloud computing, you know, it's there wherever you go. Whether you're in the library, you got your own tablet, you know, you can access those documents anyplace.
Right. And I'll tell you what, you know, people laugh at it, but I really love the Chromebook that I have, because I can go anywhere I want, and as long as I have a network connection.
You're good.
I'm good. And people always say, well, what if you don't have a network connection? Really? How often do you work somewhere where there's no... Really? Seriously, how often do you actually work somewhere where there's no network connection? Well, what if I ever do? Well, what if you ever break both of your hands? How are you going to... You know, I mean...
Well, then you get one with the cellular data in it.
Right. Well, I get that.
Yeah.
With a Chromebook, I get a free 100 megabytes a month. Which is not a lot if I'm watching videos or whatever, but it's an awful lot of document work every month. And you're not going to use it all the time anyway. You're only going to use it when you haven't got Wi-Fi. So it to me, and I love carrying it around. I get 8 hours of battery, 8 hours of use out of the thing every day. I can watch videos. I can listen to whatever, whatever. And it just all works for me nicely. I'm a big fan of the Chromebook. Except it doesn't have wired, it doesn't have an Ethernet plug, so I can't use it here, unfortunately, because this doesn't have wire. We're in a radio station. I get why we don't have wireless in here. I do. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Although you have now wasted an hour of your life with us, you have the chance to do it all again, because you're a slow learner. As we come back for a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, we are Soundbites, and we will continue to be right here on the truly great member supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned, and we'll be back after these very important messages.
Online, toll-free, 800-790-0415, or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of this week's Soundbites, the day before
the big game.
But what we should warn folks ahead of time, because by the time next Saturday's show is coming on, it's going to be darn close to the other big day, which is the Tuesday the 14th. So if any of you geeks here want to get your head out of your butt and order early or start thinking about that special gift, because by the time we remind you next Saturday, it might be too late.
That's right. What's interesting is that I've been asked by the RCSI, the Rochester Computer, RSC.
The Rochester Computer Society.
Yeah, RCS, right. Rochester Computer Society, to speak at their next meeting, which is Valentine's Day.
Oh. I was a little lucky.
And you said yes?
Well, my wife, I said yes, and then I realized what day it was, and I said to my wife, I'll cancel. She said, no, it's fine. Go ahead. She did. She said it was fine. We've been married 30 plus years,
so dude.
And you know, we'll celebrate over the weekend. That's what we normally do anyway. Yeah. It's the day itself. I'll do something. I'm not going to say anything.
Kind of
she might actually be listening, but but you know, the big celebration is the weekend. So it's really not
wrong with
bad,
that.
I think.
I'm always in trouble every year because my wife's birthday is on the 17th. And we have to have two separate celebrations, of course.
Always.
So was it last year or year before? The apple cider meeting was on Valentine's Day, and our Saturday meeting was on her birthday. So I was really screwed. So this year the cider meeting is actually the 8th this week because we had an early week, and so I'm safe for Valentine's Day and her birthday with other commitments.
Very nice.
Safe from other commitments, I guess, is the right word.
Yeah, safe from other commitments.
Yeah, exactly right. In other words, you won't be in the doghouse. Yeah.
But for those of you who have a significant other, even in these days an insignificant other, don't forget that Valentine's Day is coming up, and don't wait until the last minute. Get a nice card, a nice box of chocolates,
or
make a nice dinner reservation. See, the dinner reservation
is rough.
Flowers are big. Flowers are big
because... And they triple the prices that day.
And they triple. So you get them a little early, and you have them delivered.
Yeah.
That's how that works. But more importantly, when we finish, delivering them and making dinner reservations means you thought about it ahead of time.
Yep.
And that it wasn't like, holy crap, somebody at work mentioned it's Valentine's Day. So do it this week. Make the reservations... And buy the flies. Even Linda likes it. And then you gain points instead of, oh, thanks, but you waited till the last minute.
But the reason I was leading into that is another segue into the promotion that we've got going on.
Which is very important.
Yes, which if you folks take the time, we're doing an ultimate Valentine's Day giveaway. And if you want more information, I would suggest you go to our webpage because you can go ahead and make these other plans. But then we got some other super stuff that would make you the hero if you happen to win it. And Rob's going to be announcing it on his show on the 13th, the winners who are going to qualify. And you just have to write in a little essay of why you think you deserve these particular prizes.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing.
It's on the jazz901.org website. You can enter to win the ultimate Jazz Valentine's Day giveaway. You must actually be able to pick it up Tuesday morning.
Yeah, they're not going to mail it to you. You got to come and pick it up. So if you can't pick it up, you can't have it. So read the rules before you enter, right? So in the meantime, we're going to go to the phones and we're going to talk to Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
I'm using the calendar in Google Calendar. Is there a way I can just put my own information? They always want to put a date in, and it makes my line too long, and I can't do a second line unless I put another time line on it. Is there any way I can just put my own information in their calendar without using time slots?
You want to make a calendar entry without a date or time on it? That's the point of a calendar, isn't it?
I want to put my own time in because I want to put... like from 9 to 12.
Yeah, so you put that in.
But they don't. Then it only comes out 9, and it doesn't show the end time.
Yeah, you should get a colored line from 9 a.m. to 12 a.m. A little colored block showing you the time the
when you look at the calendar.
Well, I'm doing it on the months one. Maybe that's a different.
Yeah, if you take a look at it on a day or week.
Yeah, on month you only get one short line because it's trying to fit all the whole month into it.
Okay.
Right, but if you look at it on day or week, you'll see that that whole section is blocked out from the start time to the end time, so you can actually see when how much of your day the appointment fills.
But then if I go back to the month one, it doesn't.
Well, that's simply a function of the fact that they're trying to fit a whole month on a page, and they can't do magic.
Not enough room.
They really can't do
you can't.
Magic.
What's interesting is there's a custom day option. So if you don't like a week, which is 7 days, or a month, which is 30 days, you can make your custom option, say, 14 days.
Okay.
And then you can see 2 weeks at a time in that daily mode, so you can see the entire calendar.
There's also the agenda view, which is really kind of neat. It shows each day on its own line, and it's textual, and you see, 12 p.m. - 2 p.m. sound bites on Jazz 90.1 FM, blah, blah, blah. So you can see them that way on the agenda view.
I don't see that button.
For each
Where is
day.
It?
Right there.
Maybe an option.
Oh, agenda. The one that says agenda, right?
The one that actually says agenda on it.
Okay.
Yeah, Steve is...
Yeah, because I want to put... I mean, some things I put it on the calendar are the same time the meetings are, and I just have to pick which meetings I want to go to at, say, 9 o'clock.
Right.
You can actually create different calendars with different colors. So a home calendar, work calendar, your business calendar, a club calendar.
And they will live side by side on the same page.
Okay.
In different colors to help you distinguish them.
Okay. Because that's what I was looking for, so I could use it on my iPad and other places, and this seems to be able to go there fine.
Yeah. You might want to take a look at either the week view or the agenda view.
Okay.
Yeah.
Week. All right, I'll try the agenda. That might be do what I want.
Check them out.
I got one other question.
Sure.
Got a new iPad. And I want to put some spreadsheets on it. It's a Microsoft Excel.
Yep.
How do I get those over on the...
Well, you need a program on... Well, two ways. You can email them to yourself, and then you can view that file in the email. If you actually want to edit that file, you need a program to do that. Apple makes their Numbers program to create and edit spreadsheets. There's also one from DataViz called Documents to Go. There's three or four different programs you can buy to edit Microsoft Office files on your iPad.
Okay.
I think the Apple ones are probably the least expensive of the ones I know about. They're $10 a piece, I think.
$9.99.
Okay, so that would be Apple Numbers.
Right. Yeah, Numbers is the spreadsheet, and it can read Excel files.
If you look for iWork, I-W-O-R-K, it's all three of them. Pages, which is Word, Numbers, which is Excel, and Keynote, which is PowerPoint.
Oh, okay. So then I put that on the iPad.
Right. Then you mail your presentation to yourself, your spreadsheet to yourself.
Okay.
Or you can file transfer them through your computer, plugging the wire into your computer.
Right. You normally plug your iPad into your computer?
I have, when I want to recharge it, yeah.
Right. But you can also then open up iTunes.
Okay.
And move stuff over that way.
Okay. Because I tried that Dropbox, but then I wouldn't open it up over on the iPad.
Yeah, right. You need a viewer program on the iPad to view files.
Okay.
But Dropbox is a nice over-the-air method, we call it. You run a program on your computer and a program on your mobile device.
Yeah.
And documents you put on one automatically show up in the other. But you still need a viewer for that document on the iPad.
Okay, I think I can work on that then. All right, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
And you were also talking about AirShare.
Yeah, AirSharing for the Mac or for the iOS is a method for transferring files between your computer and your iOS device. It basically turns a web server on, so you can share and view your files. But again, that just copies the files between the devices. You still need a program to actually edit that file.
Right. All right, our next caller is Chris from Williamson, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a real good one here for you. As usual, my son's wife dropped off their laptop to me, thinking that I can repair anything, which, that's out of the question. But this one here, it's a Windows 7 laptop, and apparently they got hit with what they call the backdoor Trojan horse.
Yeah.
And it's, well, I was able to get the Trojan horses off the computer, along with the, hundreds of adwares.
Oh, yeah.
But it's left me with a laptop here that when you hit the start menu on the left bottom, you know, the little Microsoft symbol, it comes up, and all the program folders are empty. And the right side where it says shut down, everything above it is gone.
Yep. It's hiding it. It's called the executive.
Some of them hide it. Some of them remove it.
Yeah, a lot of them, though, are hiding it. And, again, that's where we've had to, as you've heard us say before, you bring it in and we literally take the hard drive out of the machine. We have to put it on our bench, run these programs that we've got to remove that stuff, put it back into the machine, and then continue the rest of the removal.
Yeah, so once you get the bad software out, the things in your start menu are still hidden. So it's what is it, right-click on the start menu and somewhere in properties. You can tell it to show those icons back again.
Yeah, because all the desk icons were disappeared too.
Yeah, the same thing. I actually had a machine this week with the same issue.
Okay, now I do have the ability to pull the hard drive out and slave it with another computer,
which
is exactly what I did.
Well, you're right. That cleans the virus off, but it doesn't
bring back
It doesn't bring back the icons yet.
And there's some other programs that you can run to do further cleaning.
Yeah. So it's a right click on the desktop. I had to do it on a Vista machine this week, and there was a show icons command, and then right click on the start button to bring up properties for the start menu, and there's checkboxes to show the icons. So you have to check those back on so the icons will show.
That will work sometimes.
Sometimes.
Anyhow, it's right click on the screen
and select properties. And one of the choices somewhere is to show the icons.
Yep. Yeah.
Properties.
Now I don't even
see properties on this.
It should be the last icon the last menu
item
command.
Down at the bottom.
Yeah, it says personal. It goes with gadgets. Personalized is the last one.
Personalized. You're on Windows 7?
Yep.
Yeah. They changed everything around on Windows 7.
You hit personalize.
So somewhere in there, there's checkboxes to show desktop icons or something like that.
You just hit that.
Yeah, and you can
go
turn those back on. Now, the more malicious of the Trojans will actually delete the icons rather than hide them. And that makes it even harder to bring them back.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is a 500 gig hard drive. And it's got over 14 gigs of hard drive in use. So, therefore, you know, it, what do you call it? Something's on the laptop.
Yep.
Now, you can get on the internet, but that's when you go with, find a program.
It redirects you.
It redirects you, and I can
You've also got a rootkit. Error. You've also got a rootkit program on there,
and you may have to change your internet options too. But it sounds like it's pretty deeply infected.
Yeah, let me suggest that the first thing you do is go to Security Tango at securitytango.com.
Right.
Follow the page for the Windows Waltz. Click Let's Dance in the menu and select Windows Waltz. Download all the programs starting with rkill, going all the way down to whatever antivirus program you want.
Yep, it's got all that on this machine.
Well,
running several different programs is what's necessary.
And then you pull that drive. You don't do it on that machine. You download the program somewhere else. Then you pull the drive and run all those programs with that drive slaved to another machine.
Yeah, I did all that already.
And you still have the problem.
Those programs are not going to get rid of the rootkit.
Yeah, it may not get rid of a rootkit. You have to use different programs for the rootkit. But even if the bad software is gone, you still have to fix the problems the bad software created. You have to unhide the icons. You have to make the folders shown again. So you have to go into the properties and uncheck hidden. So And hope you didn't get one of the bad things that actually deletes the files rather than just hides them.
Yeah, now I say desktop icon setting, and it doesn't have any box. It has a recycle bin. It's the only one on there. Desktop icons, because you want to check them where it says computer, user files, and network.
Right, you check the ones on you want to be able to see.
Okay, because they're all unchecked.
Right, that's what the malware did, is uncheck them all so all your desktop icons go away.
Boy, it is a nasty little thing they write, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes, it is.
Now, do you know why these people write these kind of things?
Yeah, for money.
Good explanation.
Some of them make money at it. Some of them are just counting coups. Some of them are just, you know, it's easier to be malicious than to be productive.
Oh, very good.
All right, we got to go. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Have fun. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we are Sound Bites. Right, I like that music. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, boy, do we have some great news for you.
And what would that be?
Pancakes.
Yes.
We are having another pancake breakfast, as we did the last time. Dave, you have the...
Yeah.
Particulars.
Yes. And for you folks that want to go, definitely this coming Monday, tickets go on sale. Now, we had over 300 people show up last time.
And didn't you make like 1,000 pancakes?
Oh, we were making pancakes like you wouldn't believe. Now, here's the story. It's all the pancakes and sausage you can eat, juice and coffee that you can drink, and it's only how much, Nick?
$5, ladies and gentlemen. All of this. For a measly $5 under the big top today only.
And the kids get to eat four?
Free-ish.
Yeah.
Kids under five are free.
Kids under five are free. It's all about five, folks.
Yep.
$5 buys you all you can eat. If the kids under five, they eat for free.
And the big thing is, though, like I say, tickets are going to go on sale this coming Monday. You can go to our webpage to find out all the information on that. And Ray and Al are going to be doing their polka show from 10 to noon. Nick, Steve, and I will be floating around during that time to, you know, mingle with the folks. You're going to see a lot of the other DJs will be there. So, you know, it's a great chance to come here to Greece Olympia High School, 1139 Maiden Lane. It's in the large cafeteria. Now, last year, the polka guys literally had people dancing in the aisles.
I tell you what, it was
a great time. And, you know, I don't know what Rob plans for us, you know, because we're going to be doing our show from 12 to 2, maybe I'll leave the door open and folks, if they want to swing by.
We can't promise anything. We don't
but
know.
Who knows? We'll have to talk to the boss about that. But, you know, definitely a chance. You know, you can meet us from 10 to noon. We're going to be mingling around. And like I say, I'll get a chance to talk to you folks and have a good time. It was a great time. And we're going to have prizes and raffles.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and
for
tickets
$5
go on sale this Monday. They're just $5 a piece. And the date is March
10th. Yep. So put it on your calendar, March 10th. You don't want to miss it. But go ahead and order your tickets come Monday.
And while you're contemplating that, we're going to talk to Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hello. How are you guys?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm well. I have a question for you about uninstalling Norton.
Mm-hmm.
I know they have the removal tool.
Yes.
Do you run the regular uninstall and then the removal tool?
No.
Or
run the
removal tool?
No, run the removal tool.
Okay.
Now, here's another one, though. If you'd rather not use that one, that I recommend even better is the Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
Revo Uninstaller, the reason I promote that one, and it's whether you're uninstalling Norton or any program. The whole problem with Windows, and it doesn't matter what version, Windows, all it does is turn off one bit in the registry. So it's made all these entries, you know, the program and all this other information. So if I install this, say Adobe, I install Adobe, you know, I take it off, put it on because it's not working, and I do it 4 or 5 times. Believe it or not, when you tell Windows to uninstall it, all it does is turn off the bit. So if you were going through the registry, you would literally see 5 separate entries of that particular program. Only one would be active, but meanwhile, it's now made your registry a lot bigger to search. So by using Revo Uninstaller, it gets rid of the entries in the registry along with the actual program.
Very good. Then I'll use Revo.
Yeah, Revo is a far better tool. It's free. You know, and then if you still have issues, then you can go to the Norton one and do that. But I like using the Revo Uninstaller for anything, and it just does a fantastic job of totally removing it and cleaning up your machine.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, Revo Uninstaller works nicely. Oh, here's an interesting little news article. Twitter on Thursday announced that it is now able to block tweets that run afoul of certain countries' restrictions on speech, but that has prompted backlash from users who fear the microblogging service will honor takedown requests from repressive regimes. In explaining the move, Twitter mentioned France and Germany, which banned pro-Nazi speech, but many users questioned how this might play out in the Middle East, for example, where social networks like Twitter and Facebook played a key role as organizational tools during last year's Arab Spring uprisings. As a result, the Twitter hashtag Twitter Censored became a trending topic in the United Arab Emirates. Many angry users did not use Twitter on Saturday, January 28th, in protest of the move, much like the anti-SOPA and anti-PIPA internet blackouts here in the United States. Reporters Without Borders penned a letter to Twitter executive chairman Jack Dorsey urging him to ditch the idea. Another anonymous feed, meanwhile, suggested that the move had something to do with Saudi Prince Al-Waleed bin Talha's $300 million investment in Twitter. Al-Waleed, however, is a frequent tech investor. He owns stock in or has poured money into Apple, Hewlett-Packard, and more, and was active in the dot-com boom, investing in web companies such as Priceline. Another Twitter user pointed out that Al-Waleed only owes 3% of Twitter, which he said was hardly decision-making status. Twitter did not immediately respond to requests for comment about the backlash, but in explaining the new policy, the company said that if we receive a valid and properly scoped request from an authorized entity, it may be necessary to reactively withhold access to certain content in a particular country from time to time. It did not define what valid and properly scoped requests would entail, but stressed that we strongly believe that the open and free exchange of information has positive global impact. Like other web companies, Twitter has long encountered the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA, takedown notices over questionable material. As part of the announcement, Twitter said as it expanded its partnership with Chilling Effects for a new page, chillingeffects.org/Twitter, which shows Twitter-related cease and desist notices. So our question to you, should Twitter censor tweets? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Santana did. Santana?
Yeah.
From Parenton, welcome.
Yeah, hi.
I love your music.
Listen, two questions. One, I have an old XP machine I'm trying to rebuild from all the parts, and then I can't get the BIOS to show up, and it only gives me like 8 or 9 beeps. It's an Intel motherboard, and the only thing, there's a beep code that I downloaded from Intel, and it has something about CMOS shutdown, registered test error, or reserved, invalid BIOS, but I'm not sure what to do with it, so it doesn't boot up at all.
Well, there's a couple of things that could be. Dave would know this better than I, but he's busy at the moment.
I'm just answering another question.
It sounds like your BIOS has failed.
Yeah. I'm sorry, repeat it again.
The BIOS has failed?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to us. When you get 8 or 9 beeps.
Oh, yeah, no, the motherboard's hosed.
It's basically a hosed motherboard.
Usually 9 beeps, that's DMA on the motherboard.
Sometimes
is there any way of doing anything with that?
Sometimes you can replace the chip if you're handy with a soldering iron.
No, not anymore.
And can resolder multi-layer boards?
No.
You have to be insanely handy.
I've soldered before.
Pardon?
I've soldered stuff before, but I don't know if I can do this.
No, this I guarantee you cannot do.
No.
It's not like the old
days. They don't even do it themselves anymore. Even there aren't even machines that do it.
No, it's cheaper to go. It's cheaper if you really don't want to spend a heck of a lot of money and you're willing to try stuff. You can go searching for that particular motherboard and maybe find a used one if you're really feeling, you know, perky and.
Yeah. One more question. I put a system together for my son, and I installed it on a RAID 0, and everyone periodically gives that message. Windows has to check it for consistency, and then it has to do with this whole check, and then it does the check disk. Then it works, but is there anything that is causing that?
Well, that usually means you shut down wrong.
Yeah. Something wasn't, yeah.
Make sure he's not
shut down normally with the Windows shutdown.
Yeah, make sure he's not pushing the power key to shut it off.
No, right. No, it doesn't do that.
Well, it's one. It is often that. It could also be that the RAID controller you are using. This is software RAID, right?
Yeah, software RAID
on an old motherboard.
No. This is a brand new ASUS Extreme 4 Rampage.
Are these IDE drives or?
These are all SATA drives.
All right, that should work.
Are both the drives good? Have you tested both the drives to make sure that there's no bad sectors in them?
They look good. They're brand new drives.
I've had brand new drives come out of the bag and boot up and get everything loaded on them and then totally die on me.
That's one thing that a program called SpinRite is good at is doing block level scans like that and verifying all the blocks on the hard drive. It's a commercial product from GRC, but for people that are doing a lot of work on their own PCs, it's nice to have.
Yeah, I mean, just because they're brand new, it doesn't mean that they can't fail. There is no guarantee on a hard drive. It's just like a light bulb. You can put a light bulb in, it might last a whole year. It might last 2 seconds.
Isn't there an acceptable number of known bad blocks that the drive's BIOS writes around?
In the day, yeah.
So a 1 terabyte drive has 1 trillion bytes on it, and each byte is made up of 8 bits, so that's 8 trillion bits, and each block has a start bit and a stop bit, and so you're looking at 10 trillion bits on the drive. Any one of them could fail.
Right. Generally speaking, when a RAID 0 device, when a RAID 0 system needs to check consistency, there's something not right, either a controller problem. It may be that you've got an older controller chip and it's not fast enough to keep up with the data, or there's something wrong with one of the drives or whatever. For those of you who don't generally follow the acronym world, particularly in the server array area, RAID stands for redundant array of inexpensive disks. And back in the day, it used to be you had to have really expensive, very large hard drives in special containers with special controllers and everything else. And now you can use RAID, which is a redundant array of inexpensive disks, and you can have RAID 0, which is essentially mirroring, and RAID 1 and RAID 2 and RAID 5 and RAID 10. And you can... it's a way to make sure your data is more protected. But if you're constantly having to check consistency, then something is not right. And the first thing to look at is whether or not the controller that you're using can handle the data and the data rate. And secondly, one of the drives could indeed be going bad. You should really do a check on those drives.
Yeah, so you mentioned some utility to check the drives.
SpinRite.
Spinrite, okay.
Right, a commercial utility from GRC.com.
Okay, GRC.com.
There's still, Windows still does a zero format, doesn't it? You can say format all sectors, and it will go through the entire drive and read and write every single sector. That was a command prompt.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the nice thing about Spinrite is it can check your blocks without damaging any of the data.
Yeah, right, okay. And the controller, how would I deal with it? Well, that's already fixed, right?
Well, is it a hardware controller in the
motherboard?
On the motherboard or on the hard drive card?
No, there's no card. It's whatever.
It's on the motherboard.
Into the motherboard.
Yeah, it's on the motherboard.
Yeah, it's right on the motherboard. And I actually lied to you. RAID 0 is striping. And what it does is it takes essentially, you can think of it as it takes half the data and writes it to one drive and the other half and writes it to the other drive.
Yeah, no, that I know.
Yeah.
And so you get performance, you get speed, but not backup. That doesn't do anything there's
prevent
no redundancy.
Yeah.
There's no.
And in fact, it's more dangerous because if anything goes wrong with one drive, you lose all your data on both your drives.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and RAID 1 is mirroring, and that's actually... you end up, if you've got 1 terabyte drives, you only get 1 terabyte of use. But if one of the drives dies, the other one is still there.
Yeah.
Right,
so
right.
That's
okay.
a better for that. But there's a bunch of different RAID levels.
When I installed the Windows 7, you had to install a RAID 0 driver.
Well, you didn't have to. I mean, Windows 7 doesn't require RAID.
Right. No, I wanted to do a RAID 0.
Oh, okay. For performance.
So, yeah, right, right. So if the controller on the board, is it, does that get an update driver for it?
It may. That's something to check on. Check the motherboard manufacturer and see if there's any driver updates for it.
And check the motherboard manufacturer for whatever controller chip they're using.
Yeah.
And then check to see if that controller chip is, in fact, rated to take RAID.
Okay.
It may not be. Just because Windows said you should do RAID doesn't mean you should do RAID.
Yeah. Okay.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
Bye.
And some will do RAID 1 well and not do RAID 0 well. They don't stripe well, but they'll do mirroring.
And how many people notice the speed of RAID anyway? Yeah. So drives have gotten so fast these days that almost the use of RAID, except in large corporations where you have huge data, is sort of dwindling. I like the idea if you have 2 1-terabyte drives, it looks like 1 2-terabyte volume to your computer.
Right.
Because I have a lot of novice users don't know how to handle 2 drive volumes.
Right, exactly. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. But we'll be back in just a minute, because I'm not going to get into a whole RAID thing again.
It's a RAID!
Yeah, exactly. Everybody argues about what's best for RAID. Hint, 10. Going to be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Dave got a question.
Yeah, over on texting. And the person is trying to do a resume and had it in a couple different programs. And what I was suggesting to them to do, and trying to decipher what was happening, is the best thing to do, especially if you're not, which we aren't, is a big fan of, open office and the works and all that. You got to pay out money. Well, there is a free program, which is called Open Office.
Microsoft Office, you have to pay money.
Yeah, and Open Office is free. You can download it at openoffice.org. Works you have to pay for, too.
Microsoft Works. Yep. Pretty much all the commercial programs. Yeah, yep.
But Open Office is free, and it's got a free word processing in it. What they could do then is open both of those documents wherever it was created, select it all like we were saying before, and doing to that other caller, do a cut and paste. And it'll save it in a format, RTL, and again, it's free, that you could then upload to Google's. Google Docs will handle it. So, you can do the cut and paste from the two different ones, combine it into one, thus you have one particular file that you can then save off to the Google Docs, and now you can access it no matter wherever you are. And that's, again, where we're going into saying about the tablets are going to replace both your, I can see within a couple of years, both of you guys won't be sitting here with laptops. And you're both going to be here with your tablets. And they're going to be setting up on an angle that you're going to be able to do the typing and everything else, or searching and everything. And it's all solid state. Very little to go with. That's the other thing, though.
The only thing we'll need is to get rid of these little wires.
Before you move on, there are
two things you need to know that are available. There is a program for OpenOffice called 0002, the number 2, 0002GD, which connects OpenOffice to Google Docs. There is also the Microsoft Cloud Connect. No, Google Cloud Connect, which will connect Microsoft Office to Google Docs.
Oh.
But it's not available for the Mac.
She's PC.
Okay, then she's good to go. Google Cloud Connect will connect Microsoft Office to Google Docs. Now, I don't know if it saves. I've not played with it yet, so I don't know if it saves stuff in Google Doc format, and therefore you're not using the 7 gigs of space you've got.
Right.
And I don't know that for either one of them. But if you prefer to use OpenOffice or Microsoft Office instead of straight Google Docs through the browser, then either of these products will integrate you back into Google Docs for storage. And I think that even if you only get the 7 gig, that's an awful lot of documents.
Yeah, that's so
an awful lot of documents. Particularly when you can, delete the ones you don't need anymore, whatever. It's the same thing with Gmail. Gmail gives you 7 gig. Google Docs gives you 1 gig. Even so, that's an awful lot.
hooking Thunderbird to Google Docs is ludicrously simple. You need to know what your name is, mm-hmm. what your logon is for Google Docs, mm-hmm. Google Gmail, and what your password is for Gmail. Once you've got those three pieces of information, the rest of it is automatic. It all happens automatically in the back. And literally, I type those three pieces because, you know, I'm a skeptic.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Type those three pieces of information. I hit enter, and I expected to get all kinds of Cirrus and hoopla. And all of a sudden, it said, well, you're connected now. What? What?
Hmm? Which you'll mean.
So that works out ridiculously easy. I've not checked out the Google Docs integration for either OpenOffice or Microsoft Office, but what I'm reading online says they both work pretty nicely. You can also get SkyDrive or SharePoint online connectivity to Microsoft Office.
The OnLive viewer they just released for iPad. So actually, that goes back to the earlier caller, the online viewer, Microsoft's OnLive viewer for iPad.
That's a mouthful.
Lets you view Microsoft Office documents you have on the Microsoft Cloud service.
But view them only.
Yeah.
Yeah. But going back, since I got into the Gmail, that is such a godsend because it comes right to my phone. You know, on any important ones, I have come right to there. Bam, I can be on it, respond back. And again, like you say, I tap into more free Wi-Fi around.
Yeah.
I pay, what is it, $25 for the 2 gig a month. I use very little of it because I'm using so much of the free Wi-Fi. I don't have to worry about for the few times that maybe I hit an area that, I'm in the car and I got to find out something.
Yeah,
no biggie, because most of the time I'm getting free and I haven't hit my 2 gig yet.
Yep. One of the interesting things that I was talking to somebody else about is I still have my original Droid. When I upgraded to the Galaxy Nexus, of course, I kept the Droid.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, well, what can you do with it? I said, well, it's essentially an iPod now. It's an iPod, right? I mean, I can listen to music. Yeah. I got, it's only 16 gig, but so what? I can listen to music. I can do anything I can do on Wi-Fi. I mean, I can do anything I can do on an iPod. I love that. Maybe more because there are a lot of iPods that don't have Wi-Fi, So I can do any of those things, and including Gmail and everything else. As long as I have Wi-Fi, I'm good to go. And really, except in the car, I'm driving.
Yeah.
There's almost nowhere I go that I don't have Wi-Fi available to me. It's hard to find a restaurant nowadays that doesn't have Wi-Fi, it's easy to find one. Is probably the best way to put it.
Well, one of the features of some of the new cars I've seen are Wi-Fi hotspots in the car. You plug your USB 3G dongle in, and there's a Wi-Fi hotspot built into the car for your passengers.
It's even coming to the RTS buses that you're going to be able to, on your app, see where a bus is located, that you're trying to catch and not have, especially if it's really snowing and bad out or rainy, you don't want to sit out there. You can see where it is and time it just right to get out there to your bus stop or that, because the buses are going to have a GPS tracking in them anyways. And then once you get on there, you can still surf and everything else.
Well, we took a train to New York and we had Wi-Fi all the way down. It was a beautiful thing. They haven't got it on the run. They had it on the run from New York to Rochester, and then they don't have it on the run from Rochester to Chicago. What? Whatever. But the point is, that's becoming more ubiquitous as well. And really, it's getting to the point where it gets to be kind of hard to not have Wi-Fi available to you somewhere.
It's usually just a given.
Yeah.
You just take it for granted. I mean,
I took my car in for the free oil change from the dealer,
mm-hmm.
and
sitting
in there, free Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
You go into a restaurant, free Wi-Fi. You go into a coffee shop, free Wi-Fi. You go into Subway, free Wi-Fi.
Well, even my bank, I go to my bank.
Yes,
come on in, free Wi-Fi. You sit there; they have coffee waiting.
I know that always struck me as odd because most people want to get in and out of the bank as fast as possible.
Well, it depends.
If you're stuck standing in line,
You're waiting for something, you got an appointment there, you got to do some work, and you still want to, tap in to check on stuff. And again, though, but it, here it goes. If you've got particular documents, you don't want to carry them with you. They got the free Wi-Fi, and then you got to look something up. Oh, you pull out your tablet. Oh, I can look that up if they need particular information. And if it's out on the cloud, boom, you can pull it down. And again, it's not on that physical device. You're going up to the cloud, grabbing that information so you could, you know, share it with whomever that you have to at the bank. And there you go.
Yeah. Well, and I find a lot of people are doing that now. They've got their tablet of whatever sort, whether it's an Android or an iOS tablet, and they give speeches out of them. They kind of use them as a teleprompter rather than having to carry paper with them. I have toyed with doing it on here. I'm just not facile enough with it on this. I have a netbook, and it's a short screen. You know, if it was a tablet, I could turn it the sideways, and it would be easier to read. But it's a short screen, so I have not
well,
been.
If you only have things plugged into one side, then you could.
That's true. If I had it, right, there's a thought, and don't think I haven't thought of that. But the basic idea here is, but this the screen doesn't turn. It's not a tablet. The screen won't automatically turn.
There's no manual rotation command?
I could make a manual rotation. Sure, it's Linux. I can do that. It's very easy to do that, actually. the command is a very esoteric one. It's called, to write this down, rotate. But the whole idea is that you can have your documents wherever you are on whatever device you have them, whether you're using Google Docs or the Microsoft Cloud stuff or iCloud or whatever it is you happen to use. The nice thing about Google Docs, of course, is that it's available across the board. If you only use Apple products, maybe iPad, iCloud is enough for you if you've bought all the software for all the devices you carry. But in Google Docs, it's all right there online. You don't have to buy anything. As long as you've got a browser, you win. And I use my Chromebook everywhere. I mean, everywhere.
Here are the club calendar highlights for Saturday, February 4th. The East End Jazz Boys play at Havana Mo's on East Avenue starting at 9 o'clock tonight.
If you own or run a business,
the Foresta and the Electro
Class play at Steve's Restaurant
Joint in Henrietta starting at
Everything pitch. Started playing at once.
It was kind of exciting. That's just a little preview of the things you'll hear very shortly here on Jazz 90.1. All right, look, we're done. We're just finished. We're going to bring in Linda and George, who are clearly the professionals here, and we're just going to go home and quit. You'll have lots of good German music coming up. Linda's promised to keep George in line this weekend. We know how difficult that is, but I think she's on it. She can do this. And we're done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life listening to us. But we'll be back again next Saturday to bug you just a little more on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.
Here are the